Okay, so we, you know, didn't get 3 days. I thought we might do Parsha in Switzerland, but that just didn't happen. What? No, the microphone was not working on the bus. Anyways, so Mishpatim is chock full of mitzvot. Really, really quite full of mitzvot. Right after the awe-inspiring Parshat Yitro, which, you know, has the story of the revelation, and Aseret HaDibrot, which are overarching principles. So you get into the nitty-gritty, and that, you know, we could go through this and demonstrate this, but in many ways, the Aseret HaDibrot are sort of hammered. You know, the details are hammered out in Mishpatim. Right, you have, you know, things like Lotignov and the Aseret HaDibrot, and here you have what that looks like. Because in addition to theft, that also means that there's laws of, and there's and a million other things, right? There's laws of damages, right? Tort laws, an expansion, right? I can't take other people's property, and if I damage it, I got to pay back. And, you know, you get derivatives of a desire, you get derivatives of everything. And that's really what happens in Mishpatim. Now there are a lot of things you can do when you're trying to get a feel for Mishpatim, right? You can just give up on trying to get sort of any overarching theory of Mishpatim. You can note the expansion the Aseret HaDibrot. You can, if you're into academia, you can do a lot of the comparative studies between this and the laws in the Code of Hammurabi and Esh Nuna and all the other ancient codes of law, noting the similarities, which shouldn't disturb you because they're responding to the same things, right? Meaning that would be like being disturbed to, you know, both America and Israel having speed limits, right? Cars are a reality, so, you know, you need to have a law that relates to how fast you can go. The way to figure out the uniqueness of the system would be the differences in the laws. But the fact that they're both responding to, like, goring oxen should not really disturb anybody. You can talk about the nature of a Brit. And all those are worth doing. And then there's, you know, zeroing in on it. So let's take one small example, because I don't think we have time to do some of the broader ones. I know we talked about this last year, though not in Mishpatim, I think, when it comes up elsewhere in Tanakh. But in the middle of the parasha, you get the mitzvah of lending money. Now, this is an important point, because in general, people, I think, misunderstand this. In the world of Tanakh, why is lending money a mitzvah? Thank you. It is a form of tzedakah. So much so it's a form of tzedakah that how many times the Torah actually list halachot of what we call charity in pshat?
10?
Zero. 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 That every context in which Chazal then derived tzedakah from is not actually primarily about tzedakah. It's primarily about lending money. The only explicit tzedakah you have in pshat is matnot aniyim, right? Which is sort of tzedakah. It's not really handouts in the exact way, because the halacha is very explicitly not about handouts.
They have to come and get it.
Correct. You have to leave it there, and they get to take it, right? Which is a very different formulation. And even there, they have to do, right? Therefore, they're also even doing the work, right? You're like allowing them to like clean up your field at the end and keep whatever they get. But it's not exactly easy, right? It's like, you know, get all the but the classic tzedakah, and again, this is even maintained lahalacha, that the better form of tzedakah is not handouts, but loans.
Yeah.
Because conceptually, the primary role of tzedakah is to actually help the poor and help them maintain their dignity. And loans do that in a much better way than charity. The one exception really is Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani is a handout of sorts, you know, twice every 6 years, right? Shemitah is a retroactive handout, which is very different experientially, right? It's a loan which turns into a handout if you don't pay it back by the time Shemitah comes. But I just want to highlight that by actually reading the Psukim here. And I think in order to understand it, you really have to go back before you get to that mitzvah. So in Chavbet, pasuk chaf aleph, you get kol almana v'yatom lo ta'anun. Right? Don't oppress the alman and the yatom. Imanei ta'ane oto kimsok yitzak elai shemoa eshmat ta'akato. And if you cause oppression to the alman and yatom, so I'll listen to their cries. V'chara api v'arakti etchem b'charev ayun eshechem almanot v'nechem yitomim. Right? That is, you know, Hashem's very harsh. Mida keneged mida is if you oppress the widow and the orphans, then your wife will become a widow and your children will become orphans. What? Well, it's also just a way of saying you will die.
Well, no.
Right, you will die. But the... Yes. Yes. And then once he's set up that you have to, you know, take care of the unfortunate members of society, he says, Im kesef talver ami edahani machloti lo kinoshe lo tisimun alav neshech. If you lend money to the poor, and here Chazal say this is one of the three ims, which is a chiyuv, is a mitzvah. He says, when you lend money to the poor, don't be a noshe, a creditor, right? Don't
take interest.
So there's different things that actually come from that, right? It's one is don't take interest, lo tisim lo neshech. We also have other halachot, which is lo tisim lo of kenoshe, which is to not act in a way that makes him feel uncomfortable, like showing up when he doesn't have money, right? And im chabol tachbol samat reyechad bo Hashem es tishivenu lo. And if you have to take security, which you're allowed to do, you're not allowed to take security that he actually needs. So if he needs day clothes, if you take day clothes, you have to return it to him during the day and only have it at night. Meaning it's symbolic, but you can't actually deprive him of life necessities. Ki hiksuto levada yisim lato leoro ba meyishkava yaki itzake levi shamati gichanunani. And I think it's just worth highlighting how radical the philosophy of the Torah is here, right? Yes, the primary money, the mitzvah is a loan. So you might say, okay, the primary mitzvah is a loan, not just a handout. But then the Torah does everything in its possibility to make it essentially, right, not actually a handout, but essentially, right, as close to a handout as you can get. I mean, obviously the ideal is that he will be successful and he'll be able to pay you back. But the ideal is to give it to him as a loan, knowing you might never get it back, but maintaining his dignity. And then the Torah says, look, I'm telling you to give a loan, but here's what I'm going to do to make sure that that loan is actually protective of him. One, no interest. Two, is if he can't pay it back, so don't
hound him.
Right, don't hound him. Right? And even if you take a security from him, which normally taking collateral implies that, no, this is really, really a loan, they say, yes, take it, but you know, when he needs it, give it back to him. It's only when he can spare it, so keep it in your house. Right? This is like a headache for the lender. Right? Can you imagine someone saying, look, you get to take security, but you're taking a security, his car that he needs for commuting, so you need to drive it to your house every night and return it every morning, right? I mean, that's, or whatever, or be awake when he comes, right, to give him the keys. I don't know if you have to be the one to drive it over to him. And you see that, you know, this just very interesting mitzvah, where on the one hand, yes, you're chayav to lend money, but there is this emphasis on maintaining their dignity, not giving it a handout straight out, even when you know that realistically you're not going to get it back. And I think you get that a lot throughout the halacha. That, and again, this is both in pshat and halacha l'maisa, that we say that a loan is a bigger mitzvah because, right, both it maintains their dignity, but what else does it do? The purpose of a loan, it gets people active in a way that a handout doesn't, because they think they have to pay it back. Right? So the Torah is trying to, right, have its cake and eat it too. It's saying, give them a loan, not a handout. But there's not a loan in the way you know of loans. Right? It's a loan that is actually to your detriment. Because remember, any loan without interest is essentially a handout because of inflation.
Well,
and
are we assuming inflation?
Fine. Law, at the very least, possible inflation if that existed, and the lost value of capital,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, the lost value of capital. So it prevents you from doing that, but it's still not a handout, right? Because it's sort of present it as a loan, and it puts all these laws in place which make it that you can't really impose what normally comes from being a creditor, because really, 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 right, you have to be willing for it to be a handout, and still the Torah mandates that it be a loan and not a handout. And understanding that tension that exists throughout Matnot Aniyim, loans, Shemitah, all of those things, I think is key to understanding the complexity the which halacha develops around staka, right? Things like the primary mitzvah, the biggest mitzvah is give someone a job, right? Then a loan, right? And then within staka, things in private where you don't know who it is, right? It's that combination of trying to, on the one hand, maintain the dignity and encourage the and enable the poor person to get back on their feet, while leaving sort of a safety net there in case this doesn't work out. And that, right, this is just sort of a microcosm of that in these psukim, but you see it a lot throughout the discussion of Matnot Aniyim in Chumash. Okay.